Webcomics Weekly is a weekly podcast about the process, the craft, the ins and outs
of making webcomics.
Making comics for the web. Making comic webs. Oh, that's what we should call it.
Comic webs.
Comic webs. Oh.
Better answer it.
Hello. No, it's okay. We're going to call you right back. Okay, we'll call you back in like just 10 minutes. All right, bye. That's Brad Geiger.
That is Brad.
He's not on the show tonight, but he's going to be.
He'll be on the show in spirit. Are we just going ahead with this?
I say, yeah, why not?
All right. Well, we can't flag down Dave. But
I don't know. Maybe Dave will come on later. But this is a piecemealed episode of Webcomics Weekly. We have a Dave Kellett.
Somewhere in the ether.
More than likely taking care of a baby somewhere.
Well, yeah.
And then we have Brad Geiger, who's trapped at the New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
And I say trapped because... Well, you'll find out in a bit.
If he wants to tell us about it.
He will. I'll make him. Because I want to talk about it. It's important.
As part of the con experience, that what do you do if something happens?
Yeah.
No, that's good.
But anyway, I'm Scott Kurtz. I do a little comic called Player vs. Player, PvP, celebrating our 10th anniversary next month. You can find it at pvponline.com. Who's that next to me?
It's me. It's Chris Straub. I do Starslip Crisis at starslip.com and Chainsaw Suit at chainsawsuit.com. This is going to get bad when I'm doing four.
And No Shoes for Tuesday
and
no shoes for Tuesday.com.
And The Mystic Dancer. Like, I completely go left field.
Mystic Dancer has like poetic URL not related to the title. It's just like Mystic Dancer, which you can find at gossamerteardrops.com.
Clearly, my store site where I sell vegetables and
yeah,
homegrown snacks.
And apple dolls. You know what I'm talking about? Where you dry out the apple.
The dried apple head doll. And every article of their clothing is made from corn husks. A perfect gift for your child. Here, take a look.
Oh, God, it's terrifying. Why, Mommy? Why'd you buy
this? It smells like rotting apples.
So what we're going to do is get a hold of Brad here. And talk to him about his con experience so he can get on with his evening. So Skypes, don't fail me now.
He's done with the con by now. It's late there.
Yeah, but he might want to go to bed.
Sure.
Even it's like 9.
Oh, I'm not saying so let's wait. I'm just saying we're not interrupting any business. Oh, Scott, now everybody knows that his number has 10 digits.
Wait, hold on a second. That thing said number doesn't exist. No. I beg to differ.
No, it doesn't. Oh, well, don't you need a 1?
It is. Oh, automatically using me a 1.
Oh, my God. This is already a train wreck.
It's all right. Boop, beep, boop. Boop, boop, boop. Boop, 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 beep.
Usually we don't have to put up with this because everybody's all dialed in. But due to the haphazard nature of this week's podcast, that isn't possible.
I guarantee you he won't be able to hear half of us.
I think it's because our mics are too low.
Hello?
Hey!
Hey, Brad.
How you doing?
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right, how about me?
Yep, I can hear you.
All right. I think we just jumped straight in.
Okay.
So,
is Dave there tonight?
No, I think Dave might be changing diapers or...
Yeah, we can't raise him.
Shoving bottles in faces or cleaning poop.
He's going to have to get used to that. But that's okay.
But, I mean, that's okay. Fine. We begrudge him nothing.
Absolutely.
That's the truth.
If anything, I'm a little jealous.
Brother, I ain't.
Oh. But anyway, so Brad, you're at the New York City Comic Con.
Yes.
And
it's been quite an experience.
Yeah. I think it's good that, for us, that you had a bad experience, because it's good content for the show as a way of illustrating what to do when you get to a con and you got to think on your feet.
Oh, my God. So, thinking on your feet is the optimum phrase, as you'll soon find out, because it was literally impossible for me to sit down.
So explain what happened today when you showed up at the New York Comic Con to your booth space.
Well, I got there to my booth space, and it was indeed booth space. There was space.
So you got there. You got there, and you immediately sat down on a comfortable plastic chair and started arranging all of your product, right? Like you do at every con.
At every other convention, when I've had booth space, that is exactly what I do. Except at this one, when you get booth space, you only get space. If you'd like a table, that'll cost you extra. And if you'd like a chair to sit down, that's going to cost you too.
Well, Brad, I'm sure those are like marginal costs.
$200 for a table if I want it draped.
Ugh.
And $85 per chair.
That is rape. There's no other
That's
way.
That's horrible.
That is raping.
Why?
Well, and I felt, at first I felt bad because I thought, well, maybe I'm dumb. You know, immediately I'm blaming myself, and I start talking to people, and everybody is going through this. And the bad thing about it is we got this booth exactly like we got the booth the year before and the year before that. And this has never been a problem. It's been like every other comic convention that we've ever gone to.
Right.
A booth equals, the booth space plus a table and a couple of chairs. That's the way Wizard runs it that way. Emerald City runs it that way. You know, heck, Emerald City, they bend over backwards to make sure you're not only seated, but seated comfortably, you know?
Yeah.
So, I start talking around to people, and they're like, no, we were surprised too. You know, when we got our booth, then they say, oh, by the way, if you want a table, so that's going to cost you extra.
But
and a couple of people were actually debating running out and buying tables and chairs because
sure.
It would have been cheaper to buy them on the street.
But my question is, as much as I might disagree with the practice, they should at least warn you ahead of time.
This is the first time I'm hearing this.
This, because you guys have been to the show last year. Did you have tables and chairs last year?
Yeah.
So the only thing I can say about that is that in this year, as in years past, we didn't get a booth through a straight purchase of booth. We had worked a deal with the convention promoters, so it wasn't like we filled out the standard form, and we had a contract that we had set up that we had worked out a barter system, and
right.
we had advertising for booth space.
Yeah, we had bartered advertising for their con for booth space, which I think is a really interesting point to bring up, because so for some people that feel like maybe they can't afford a con, don't be afraid to try to find creative ways to get yourself booth space.
The worst they'll do is say no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. We've done that before at different conventions, and it's always been. It's like I'm learning so much this year. I was invited as a guest to another comic convention, and they offered me a room as part of my guest status. And it wasn't until a couple months out that I found out that it was a crash room. I would be, if I was going to be in that room, it was going to be with 7 other strangers.
Oh.
So I'm learning that that when you set this stuff up, that's kind of outside of the usual stuff, you've got to really, really define your terms clearly. If I want a private room or a room that I share with 1 or 2 other people that I know, then I've got to make that clear, evidently. And if I want booth space, as far as Reed Exhibitions goes, they're saying that that your space is your space. When I immediately went over to the information booth, and I said, there's a problem with my booth. And immediately, she told me where to go. As if got this feeling that I wasn't the first person to come up and say I've got a trouble with my booth. And as I literally talked to you guys 6 other people today that had the same shock that I had when they found out they didn't have a table.
And it's no shock to me that convention is being handled by the same mob run union that runs San Diego.
But
I mean,
But in San Diego, they don't do that. Like, oh, do you want carpet? Do you want, like, it's just dirt. We'll put down something so you don't get dirty.
By
muddy.
The way, carpet's extra, too. I'm on cement floor.
Really?
What is going on? That makes no sense. You know what that is? I'll tell you exactly what that is, Brad, okay? I guarantee you that is the convention promoters not paying extra for the space and passing the cost on to the exhibitors.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I don't know whether that's true or false, although it certainly seems as if it's got pretty good latitude. But here's what you get told when you go up to complain. Well, I went up to this guy, you know, who was handling, the first level of complaints. And I said, listen, I've been exhibiting at comic conventions for 8 years now. I've never got a booth and then had to pay extra for the table. And he says, well, Reed handles this one, and they do a lot of trade shows, and that's how it is with trade shows. And I said, that's all well and good, but Reed knows what a comic convention is, and they should know that at every other comic convention, you know, they've got an artist alley like every other comic convention. You can't tell me that they're completely unaware of comic convention rites and rituals.
Guys.
I mean, they had a small press area. They had everything just like every other comic convention. You can't tell me that they've never seen how another comic convention is operated. But they say, well, trade shows, that's how it is. You just get your space.
Did they take
you
over?
You want a table that costs you extra.
Did they take over recently, this con, or what? Or was it always there?
No, Reed. No, that's just it. That's what's so surprising. Reed's been doing this from the beginning.
Yeah.
But it's just been a situation. This has been the first time I've had to deal with this. Because we had the same deal last year.
Tell me what happened, Brad.
Right down at a table. And you know what really gets my goat on this?
Mm.
We had originally two booths. And due to circumstances that arose, we were only going to have two people sitting in that space. And I called my contact at Reed and I said, listen, we don't need two booths for the amount of people that are going to show up this convention. I feel bad about taking up that much space. Give us one booth, and you take that other booth and sell it to someone who's on your waiting list. I thought I was being a pretty nice guy.
Yeah.
I could have just taken that booth. Hell, if I wanted to, I could have sublet the booth.
Yeah.
I could have had somebody come up and say, oh, yeah, you're with us, you know, and have him hand me some cash,
and
get him a badge.
And if you brought some chairs and a table with you, then you could have made a little more money.
I'll tell you what, Chris. If I would have had a chair and table concession outside of the Javits Center, I could have made enough money to pay for my hotel, my drinks, and
you would have been
a lot of tonight, and everything else I'm going to go through this weekend.
You would have been jumped if you had tried, because
oh yeah,
that union lockdown is ridiculous. Image one year at San Diego worked out a deal with a pie company that make those little pies similar to Hostess fruit pies.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Where we would make a parody of those old Hostess fruit pie comic ads in our image books. Everyone would do one, I'd do one, and Savage Dragon would do one. And then in exchange, they would provide pies for us to give out at our booth in San Diego. And we told the convention that, I guess Image told the convention they're going to do it, and they said, whoa, 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 no. You can't give away food. That could cut into our concession business. You'll have to pay us like $3 per pie or something like that.
Which
wow.
is
that you
which
hand
is far
out
far over the cost of the actual
that you
hand
out
a free pie.
So they were like, ah, screw it, we can't. But so Brad, what ended up happening? You have no booth. What ended up?
I went to the first guy and he said that there was nothing there's nothing we can do about it. So I go to Freeman, who is the group that handles the actual physical aspects of the convention center. They're a different outfit. You know, if you get something shipped to the convention, you got to get it through Freeman. You've got electrical. They've got to come up and set it up. That's the company that does that. And that's where I find out that I've got to spend all this money. And I said, yeah, I'll stand first. You know, I can't spend $200 on a table. That's just ridiculous. So I go back and I'm standing in my booth space. And I'm talking it over with my wife, and I'm like, I don't know what I should do. I mean, part of me just thinks I should get on the bus and get home, because the more I'm standing here, the more money I'm losing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my readers actually came up, and he saw that I was kind of distressed, and He goes, "Oh yeah, the head guy for the convention left his number on one of the message boards I go to," and he whips out his phone. He starts circling around. Sure enough, he finds it. So then he gives me the number for somebody else, and I get a hold of that guy, and we go back and forth for a little while. And I said, "Listen, you know, the bottom line is, you know darn well, fair is fair. This is what we did our exchange for, and you really do owe me a table and chairs." Finally, he kind of saw the point, and he said, "Okay, you'll have a table and chairs. No problem. It's coming right up." That was about quarter to 12. I got there about 11.
Uh-huh.
At 12, the workers went on lunch break. At a quarter to 1, well, at 12:30, nobody had told me that anybody had gone on lunch. I went back down. I had a table at Artist Alley that I bought at the end of the year last year, and I was getting ready to set up over there.
Yeah.
Because I figured, you know, I can put a sign in the booth that says, "Catch me in Artist Alley," and at least I'll have some place to go. And went as a last ditch effort, went back to Freeman and talked to them for a while. You know what really helps with this stuff? I not to sound like too much of a schmuck. When you're in a situation like this, getting mad and yelling and screaming doesn't do any good. The first thing you got to do is smile and laugh and let the person behind the counter know that you've got a problem mm-hmm. that you really hope that we can work out.
Well,
and once you kind of make
that's
it bad,
that is not what you know, I would have done. You're,
what's that?
Well, I mean, it's a good thing I didn't come then, Brad.
You would have been livid.
Yeah. Fatty needs to sit down.
It might not even be legal at that point.
It was horrible. Well, I that really did, because at the point I had been down to Freeman for my third time, the lady kind of knew me by my face. And she knew that I was going to keep coming, and she, you know, she knew that I was going to be a pest until I got this straightened out. But, you know, I wasn't being obnoxious. I didn't give her any reason to say, "Well, serve you right," in the back of her mind, you know. I just kept kind of, you know, this is a problem, and I do need to fix this before the convention is in full swing. And finally, somebody from Freeman was able to confirm that they did have some guys coming over. And a little bit before 1 o'clock, I got my table and chairs and was able to set up for the convention.
Oh my God.
Well, good.
But it was, it literally took me over 2 hours to get everything straightened out. And there was nothing I could do. I couldn't even set up because, number one, everything that I set up goes on the table for the most part. I could have put my banner up on the behind me, but usually I stand on a chair to do that, so I couldn't do that. And I was literally, I felt like I was on display, you know, because I was standing there in this big, almost like a cage,
right.
And people would walk by and ask if I was an exhibit and you know, make these cracks, and I'd have to kind of laugh and, "Ha ha, that's a good one." But in my head, I'm like, "I'm going to kill the next person who said something to me."
Do you come with the car?
Looks like half of your pixel showed up.
They're like, "No, too smart, too big. You didn't need to go there."
And then, yeah, someone comes by and goes, "How to make webcomics, how to make a table appear," right, Brad?
No.
Ow, 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 that book is heavy, that book is heavy, that book is heavy. So once you had your table set up, how was the show?
Joe has been very good so far. I mean, and that's kind of good and bad. Part of you wants to say, "I'm just going to boycott this show. I'll show them." But like somebody else who had a similar problem says, "Yeah, and as soon as you boycott, there's going to be 40 other people more than happy to take up your place at this convention, you know?"
Right.
So it's just got to be something that we learn how to deal with these people, you know? I mean, unfortunately, this is a huge convention, and I guess that works both ways. It's very fortunate because I am doing very well here. The How to Make Webcomics book is selling very well. I've got some preview copies of my third Evil Inc. book. That's selling really well, and people are picking up all three volumes of that, so there's kind of like what Dave calls a knock-on effect. So sales have been very good. The people have been very nice. My neighbors are all really nice people. You know, everything is good. It was just a really rocky start.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Well, I'm glad it's doing well for you. I mean, I really wanted to go. It's just that by the time it all got worked out, it was going to cost almost $2,000 for me to go. My God, tickets to New York are outrageously expensive.
And that was early.
It was about, well, we, for us, like a month, month and a half out of buying tickets is always enough lead time to get decent prices.
But
not,
here.
To New York.
No.
Not to New York. So I really feel bad for bailing on you, Brad, especially considering all the problems you had. You probably could have used an extra set of hands and...
set of fists.
Set of fists.
Well, honestly, don't feel bad. And that's something good for the podcast, too. And that is, you know, even you know, going to conventions, it's always exciting. It's a lot of fun. It's a nice challenge, and it's an opportunity to make money. But you've got to do the cost analysis before you go. And if you get into that zone where you know in your heart of hearts that you're not going to make a profit, then you can't do it. You gotta say no. You know, you've got to be smart about that, because you do too many of those kind of conventions, and you know you're gonna put yourself right out of business.
Yeah.
So I completely understand that. And besides, I'm glad we were originally going to share a room. And just one more thing, and I won't mention the hotel that I'm in, but I walk into my hotel room and there are 4 glue traps, the kind you use for mice, lined up on the floor.
Wow.
Oofa.
You know what, Brad? That was to trap savings. That was to trap quality.
And would we have been comfortable?
We would have. Oh. We would. I mean, and you know, old building, I'm sure, every building in New York in this area is going to have problems with mice and stuff. I really don't take that too seriously, to be completely honest with you. It was just kind of funny. But we would have been comfortable. It's a perfectly nice room.
Awesome. How do the rats get up that high?
Oh my God, those things climb. They climb through the, well, and
elevator.
And this is another thing that makes me feel better. They're not rat traps. They're mouse traps.
Oh. A little smaller.
For a rat would have to be much bigger. These are just for little mice. They climb through the radiator system. And through the pipes, you know, like for the showers and stuff. But their most popular thing is through radiator systems.
Your shower pipes?
Through the toilet?
Yeah.
You'd probably drown.
You know, that's a whole story you hear about rats coming up through the toilets and stuff. I don't know about that one.
Brad, I don't think the toilet is how the rats get up or the mice, but it's definitely how the chuds get up there.
Which is also why I didn't want to do this comedy.
I did not. That's, to be honest, I could afford it. Whatever. It's like I'm not risking the chuds. Those carnivorous humanoid underground dwellers are running tourism to shit in New York City. Well, so you have it goes Saturday and Sunday too, right? And tomorrow Paul Southworth is going to show up.
Yeah. Paul's going to be out at the booth with me tomorrow.
That's good.
And it goes through Sunday. It's a great convention. There's a lot of very excited fans.
That's why we were regretting not going, because we went the first year. It was awesome.
I've got a little bit of bad news for you, Brad.
Okay.
I've been reading Paul Southworth's Twitter feed today.
Yeah.
And it's like, at one point his Twitter feed said, well, I guess since I won't have much product, I'll just spend a lot of time walking around New York. So I don't think Paul got his books done in time. So you may not have well, that's good news though, right, for you, because it means more table space for
God.
I still feel bad for Paul. I mean, that there's nothing worse than going to a convention and not having the thing to sell that you were hoping
you're
to have.
You're excited,
you know?
Just do me a favor, Brad, all right? Do me a favor and make sure that Paul does not spend the day browbeating himself. You know what I mean?
Too much of that is really counterproductive.
Yeah, he's incredibly talented, and I can see him preparing himself for maybe a bad time in his Twitter feed. So
yeah,
no, I'll cheer him up.
Make sure you kick his ass for me.
There is something to be said for saying, hey, because believe me, on this last book that I've been through, I've had lots of, we'll talk about that on another podcast. I've had lots of opportunities to say, hey, you did something dumb, learn from it. And, you know, you got to smart for a couple minutes and it's got to sink in and you got to go through the hurt. But then at some point, you've got to kind of shake it off and say, okay, lesson learned, you know, move on to the next one, because you dwell on that stuff for too long and it really becomes counterproductive. You got to give yourself time to feel like a dope and then move on.
Well, I only say this because he states it publicly in his Twitter feed, but it bothers me to see someone who's as talented as Paul beat himself up almost in a very, I mean, I used to be this way. I'm still this way in other insecurities, not about my work, but you try to beat yourself up before someone else can beat yourself up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And he doesn't need to do that.
I'm going to beat you to the punch. I'm going to do it worse than you could ever do it, so don't even try to do it.
So when you see him tomorrow, tell him that Kurtz told him to rub some dirt on it and get back in the game and stop jumping off sides like a bunch of pansies.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's I will. I promise, and I'll use the baseball reference and everything.
It was football, Brad, but okay.
You want me to spit after I say it too?
Grab your crotch.
I can do that
and
kind of readjust myself. Like I can do all that.
But then be careful, Brad, because that is concrete you're spitting on.
It's just gonna stay.
Yeah, there's no carpet to absorb that.
You're gonna go, I'm so mad I can spit, and then a couple minutes later, I'll get a towel.
Brad walks into the booth space. Brad was like, okay, table set up, product set up. Now I'm just going to walk in and say, and then you walk out and you're like, what the I walk in that booth space, I can't breathe. Oh, yeah, air's extra.
Yeah, the
$500
thing,
to pump Andy booth.
The joke I was going to make earlier when we were first going through was like, yeah, well, you got the booth space. Table's extra, chair's extra, oh, and wolves removal. That's a little bit more, too. And they're just ravenous.
He bought the table. He bought the chairs.
I gotta tell you about this. I'm having my my second and third books printed by Transcontinental.
Yeah.
So they come over and they've set up like this lounge area at the convention. I'm dying to go. I didn't go over today, but part of the lounge is an 8-station oxygen bar.
Oh wow!
Should I do that?
Yes.
I've never gone to an oxygen bar. Have you?
See what it's like. No, I've never been. I'd do it though.
I gotta go. I gotta know what that's all about.
I'd try anything once.
But Brad, if you walk into that oxygen bar and everyone stops, like the whole thing stops down, get out. Like if you walk in and you blend in, then fine. But if you walk in, it's like and then everyone looks at you, run.
Oh man, do I ever know that feeling? It seems like that happens every time I walk into a room, though. If I went by that rule, I'd never walk into a room. I'd be like Dracula, waiting to be invited in.
I'm here for the oxygen, right, kids?
Right, guys? What are we breathing today?
Oh, gosh, I just came in for some good Midwestern air. Would you like...
Is that all they got is oxygen?
Yeah, what else you got?
I'm a fan of some of the other elements, too.
How about nitrous oxide?
Yeah, like you walk in and you're like, what kind of oxygen would you like tonight? Bourbon.
And fill me up, brother.
Yeah. Bring me some bourbon air and keep it coming.
Did you know you could do that? They sell alcohol vaporizers.
They do?
Yeah, they really?
Yeah, they not only do they sell alcohol vaporizers, but now there's legislation to ban them because kids could have it, because there's no law against kids breathing alcohol vapor.
Wouldn't that burn your nose, though?
I don't know. Apparently, I mean, I guess it's worth it. They're
but, like do you get high?
I could get drunk. Yeah, you get drunk.
Really?
Because it's absorbed, yeah.
Huh.
So.
Wow.
I'd try that, too.
Wow. I try it, too.
They should sell that in a combo pack. One nostril's oxygen, the other one's booze.
Oxygen and bourbon. One for each nostril.
Exactly.
Like three stops down that road when you're snorting, you know, dried gecko powder. You're like, this try anything once policy is backfiring.
How about you want to snort this? Oh man, I really don't, but okay.
I gotta try it once.
I guess I haven't done it once yet.
All right, well, so Brad, represent.
I will, my friends, and it's so good to hear you guys. I'm gonna go. I haven't eaten too much today, so I'm gonna go down street side and see if I can scrounge up some good street food.
Oh yeah, do it.
All right,
yeah,
man.
That's something that's my favorite part. My favorite part of coming to New York is going down and finding some hole in the wall with great food.
Awesome.
Hopefully we'll do it next year with you.
Yeah. We will. We'll plan ahead.
Hey, I'm hoping I can make it till next year.
Yeah. We'll plan ahead and ask for an actual table.
I might drive next year.
Let's take a road trip.
Road trip.
I'll do it.
Oh, that would be so fun.
I'll drive with you from Texas to New York.
We should arrange stuff on the way, and that make that the tour.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
I'll do it. I'm not afraid. Good van.
You afraid?
It's
some kind of chicken.
You know what? I wouldn't be afraid until we enter Manhattan. I would not know what to do with a van by the time you get to Manhattan.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
We'll just park in, what's south of that? Connecticut? Or is that north of that? That's north.
I don't know.
We'll park.
What is cities?
I never studied geography. Listen, the state right next to New York, Colorado, we'll just park the van there and walk.
And we'll take the helicopter. We'll take the hovercraft.
By the time you got into Manhattan, there'd be so many cars, though. I mean, it's almost like going through as one big unit. I mean, once you got into the lane, it would just be following that direction until you got there. I that's not such a big deal.
Yeah, but still, I bet it's slow.
Yeah, you'd have to take your time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right,
boys.
Enjoy your meal.
I am going to sign off over here.
All right, take it easy.
All right, we'll see you guys later. Hey, thanks for coming. We'll see you.
Yep, all right, bye.
Bye-bye.
What am I hitting? Stop. Oh,
hit blank. That one.
Okay.
Yeah, wow, that is awful. I've never heard that before.
I mean, that makes no sense to me whatsoever.
But it just shows to go, yeah.
No kidding, right? All right, on to our mailbag. See you later. All right, so I just want to say, you know, like I've never been to New York Comic Con, so I really can't speak for it. But for the most part, like I have found the mid-size shows are the best. You can find a show that's run by a comic book shop owner, like Emerald City or Heroes or the Baltimore Show.
Right.
Not run by some giant corporation.
That's going to do this.
Or some expo thing, you know, where they take care of their guests. It's the best kind of show to go to. Aren't you, like...
I haven't done enough of those. I haven't done enough of those shows to really know.
But don't you, like, every... maybe you're not, but I'm to the point where every year it's like, why are we doing San Diego?
Oh, I'm not there yet. And I think the reason might be because, I started by doing huge shows. And I never thought anything of it. So the idea of like, well, how many people are at the show? Oh, there's like 8,000. Oh, I don't want to do that. Like, what? No.
There's not 8,500,000 people?
Exactly.
But what do you do to manufacture a fire hazard? Well, there are no fire hazards. People can get around the aisles.
Well, how do they drive the price up?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
How do you racketeer anybody?
Do I do it myself? I do it to myself? No, no, no. You don't do it at all.
No.
It's just, you just come.
You just get the table. It's fine.
And you have a great time.
Well, how do people get shaken down? No, nobody gets shaken down. The table just comes. It's fine.
The table shakes you down. Oh, well,
but how do you put your booth up without union guys? What if it takes you more than a half hour to put your booth up? Who puts it up for you? No one. You do for free.
Okay. All right. I think I follow you. I think I got it. But here's one last question. Who bends you over? Does that happen? Like,
Oh, well, the promoter does.
That's my handle. Now I know.
And that's the convention bit. All right. mailbag.
Mail it.
So
let's mail this in.
Let's mail this. Let's mail it. All right. So our first email comes from... Do we give names on this?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Our first email comes from Tahid Bondia. Finding an unbiased opinion. Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time emailer. Yeah, they all say that.
But they totally emailed twice. No.
I think you addressed this question in passing before, but I'd like to hear you explore it a little more deeply. The question is, how do you as an artist, writer, creator, gauge your own skill? After all, being a cartoonist takes more than just will. On the internet, I've found that popularity is a particularly bad measure of how good or bad a thing is. But I've also found that friends, family, and even peers can be just as bad. Say you're the guy who needs to be told that this really isn't going to make a living for you. Who's going to tell you that? Especially after they see how much you care about your art and how bad you want to be a cartoonist. Who wouldn't opt to wait it out and hope you get better? And then, after you've put 2 years of your life into this with no real growth, who's going to tell you that you've wasted it. Good God, Tahi, come on.
I was going to say that starts to get more personal. And then your mom's like, why don't you get out of here? And she's like, get out of my bag.
Yeah. And then what do you do when your wife's like, that's it, I'm leaving. And you were never good in bed anyway. And I faked everything. Then what do you do? Where do you get a perfectly unbiased opinion that you can rely on? Even a perfect stranger is likely to compliment bad art or to avoid an uncomfortable situation with an artist. Right?
Don't know.
I wouldn't know because my stuff's awesome and everyone hates it. And that's how I know that the rest of the world is wrong and they just don't get my art and that they're not smart enough to get
it. This is such a great question. We've seen cartoonists too we've seen probably an example of everything.
Well, yeah, we were just talking about Paul Southworth, who's very talented but just beats himself up constantly.
Right, and you've seen other cartoonists who are like not very good, but they've had the world handed to them and they think they're the best.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, every first line they draw is like, oh, crapped gold again.
Another
awesome.
Winner. But and how does that guy learn? And how does Paul learn how to get over it and feel confident?
I know how to answer this question and create a side business.
Webcomic sex line.
No. It's called callmydad.com. And we just give my father the art and he will tell you unbiased his opinion. But that's a good question because I don't know. I don't think it's as bleak as maybe Tahid points out.
Well, let's take it one segment at a time because there's a lot there. Let's right. wade through. He's asking, how do you gauge your own skill? On the internet, I found popularity is a bad measure of how good or bad a thing is, certainly. But I would say that I would say it can be a bad measure, and sometimes it is. But on the whole, I think it is a pretty good measure.
Well, I mean, look, it all depends on what you're going after. If you're just an artist that's trying to achieve some kind of artistic plateau of conceptuality and morality,
yeah,
then, yeah, popularity is a horrible gauge of that. And really the only person that can gauge it is you or the other critics you admire that you're aspiring to impress.
Let's consider this, though. If you are... there's a lot of web cartoonists who are making good work, and they're not getting their due.
Okay. Sure.
That happens all the time. The question is, are they visible enough? Because they might think that they're visible, but they're really not. There are so many places where I'm sure I'm squandering... who's hitting a pipe?
I don't know. I hear it, too. someone's out there trying to record a new version of Yesterday.
Someone's signaling from the U-boat.
Ting, 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 ting. Yesterday. Ting, 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 ting.
Tequila.
All my troubles seem so far away.
What was I saying?
Well,
the idea that they're not out there. Yeah, I think there's so many places where I'm squandering, where I'm like, why am I not getting more traffic? And it's because my view of, well, I've, you know, everybody who's anybody knows about me, and this is it, then this is it. You know, that's not true. There's so many arenas that you can go into where they haven't heard of you, and maybe you'd really up your traffic. The question is, if you're making good property, and I really, I'm going to get in trouble for that one, but I really think that there is a quantitative good, you know? There are enough people on this earth that you put something in front of them, you'll get a good average where they say, nah, it's okay, or wow, this is awesome, or this is terrible.
I know I have with my friends in the past that are other cartoonists or other artists, especially in college.
Yeah.
And I know you and I have, but we've tried to put our finger on the pulse of what it is that makes somebody a good cartoonist.
Right.
Or what is going to make it so they can succeed.
Yeah.
And it seems to be what?
There's books in my way, that's all.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That big, giant pile of books I still need to ship out.
Yes.
It's more than a combination of just your artistic ability.
Yeah.
There's something else there. And I mean, it's almost like, you use terms like lightning in a bottle or some kind of spark. It's something. I mean, obviously, there's something beyond it. Because, for example, since art is all subjective, would you say that Dilbert or Scott, that guy Scott Adams, does he got it? Because clearly his art is not up to snuff. Or what about XKCD? He's not worried about his art the same way I know Tahid is, because I see Tahid's art. He puts a lot of thought into his illustration.
Yeah.
The guy that does XKCD, he's not putting all of his thought into that. He's putting his thoughts into other aspects of being a cartoonist.
Yeah.
So,
but see, that's just it. If it, and that's what I'm saying. If there is good in your work, then it, then with time, and if enough people get in front of it, then they'll see it. I think that that might be a good barometer. And I think it may not work in every case, but if you're finding yourself, I think I'm doing good work, but I don't see anybody picking up on it, then put yourself out there further. And if you, I think in time you would get either the accolades or you would get everybody going, no, not really. And then you would know. Unfortunately, I think that you may have to put some time in. You know what I mean? Like I did Checkerboard Nightmare for, well, I guess 5 years. I can't say that the first two were any good. You know, yeah. I'm not going to be like, oh, they were, you know, after 6 weeks I had it down. No, I didn't. You just had to keep going.
And I think the answer to this question ultimately is that you can't seek an outside opinion to answer this question for you.
But you, well, okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I kind of do, just because if somebody's like, no, you need to work on your hands, and you go, no, they're fine, then it wouldn't matter what people think anyway.
Well, look, I mean, one of the things that when I went to art school at the University of North Texas, when I went to college,
yeah,
one of the biggest parts of the curriculum was teaching criticism, like how to take it. Like the critique was a class of its own almost.
Oh, yeah.
Critique is huge.
No.
But the critique isn't there to some kind of gauntlet for you to go through to say you survived it. It's to teach you how to self-critique, how to be self-critical of your own work.
That's true. And Erica always said, because she was in art school, obviously,
yeah,
and then they had critique class. And a lot of it, well, the thing that was frustrating for her is that it was, the critiques were like bad, like, because it's your peers. They don't know what they're talking about necessarily.
No, it's awful.
So it's partly about learning to defend yourself and figure out what's a good criticism, what's bad. And this is the question Tahid is asking.
No, ultimately the answer is he has to decide. Because look, if you do seek an opinion, there's no way to determine what opinion to take. And you're going to bounce back and forth, and you're just going to go in circles, and you're just going to be bounced back and forth like a ping pong, and you're never going to have a direction.
That's true.
You have to, and a lot of times, and if you're, especially if you're an artist, as opposed to a writer, you have a picture in your head of what it is you want to do. And then the success, your immediate success or failure, is whether or not you were able to take that picture in your head and put it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Or if you were able to achieve with a storyline what you wanted to achieve.
Yeah, but those are examples of quantitative success. You can measure, like, I had this idea, my picture in my head, and here was what I drew, and it was not that, so I failed. So this is no good. I got to change something.
Yeah, okay. So what, I don't understand. Why is that?
No, that's not bad. I'm saying, yeah. And then you have to figure out what it is.
Well, the easy stuff to measure is easy to measure. Like, it's real easy to measure whether you're succeeding or not. Did you bring in a crap ton of money this year? No. Well, then you didn't succeed in that. How many people know about your strip? Not many. Okay, not succeeding.
Then you have a goal to work for.
Yeah.
Well, let's.
That stuff is not subjective. That's what is the opposite of subjective?
Objective.
That's objective.
Yeah. You know whether or not you have more readers this month than last month.
Pretty easy to figure
out. Yeah. But I feel like we're straying from the meat of the question.
Okay, what was it? Say you're a guy who needs to be told that this really isn't going to make a living for you.
I think that there's a fallacy. He says even a perfect stranger is likely to compliment bad art or to avoid an uncomfortable situation.
That is incorrect.
It depends on the stranger, but I don't think that you'll run into, like, the vast majority of people are willing to lie to you and say it's awesome. No, they'll tell you.
That's not true.
And they'll tell you with their actions. Like, did you like it? Yeah, it's cool. Whatever. No, he didn't like it. Huh. He didn't like it.
I had someone email me recently, like 2 days ago, and say, hey, listen, man, I've been reading PvP for a long time, and I know that you want to get your main characters married, but I'm done with the mad about you. Like, don't turn PvP into mad about you.
Yeah.
And I wrote him back, and I said, they're getting married. It's the 10-year anniversary event. What do you want? Go read CAD. I ain't going to put video game references in this. Of course it's going to be mad about you.
Yeah.
They're getting married. But, you know, the only reason I know to do that, and then he wrote back and said, way to bring it down to my level, ha ha ha, and then we were friends again. But if I had been like, yeah, maybe you're right.
Then the next guy
is this the guy whose opinion I should take?
Yeah, then the next guy would have said, oh, I was hoping you'd do it sweeter than this. And now you've got the mom in here.
Why would you put a video game reference in there? You'll just bounce back and forth.
I've got to make it heartfelt video games.
Why did you leave me Donkey Kong? Yeah. Wow, we both wanted Donkey Kong.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay.
How old are we?
I don't know. I can't believe we both went to Donkey Kong.
I never played Donkey Kong, so I'll take that.
Take it easy over there. What did you say? Snarky comment?
Oh, okay. Well, let's have a capper on this question. Taheed, your work is actually awesome. So there.
Yeah, Taheed, you're
your
good.
Art is amazing.
Your
and
art
the
is fantastic, and your storylines are good. You just need to get. You don't need to work on the subjective stuff. Work on the objective stuff.
Yeah, get your strip out there.
This isn't really a question. Should I read this one? Did you read that one?
No, I didn't.
Hey, Scott. Just listening to Webcomics Weekly and got to the part about the tax man. My parents own a small business, and when I was in the eighth grade, the tax man, or rather woman, literally came to our home. Turns out IRS agents don't need warrants or anything to come and look through your stuff. So unlikely? Hell yes. But can it happen? Yes. I saw it.
Well, thanks a lot. Now so, I'm going to be worried yes. for another couple months.
Now every knock on the door.
Until I either get my refund or I get
send
audited.
Send me into my well-fortified panic room.
Hey, read that plucky girl one.
Huh, what?
Read the plucky girl one.
The plucky girl report.
I don't know
question?
If it's a good question or not, but I remember reading it.
To be read in the voice, this is what the email actually says. To be read in the voice of a plucky girl reporter from the 50s. Think Hudsucker Proxy.
I don't know if we can read a girl's voice.
I hear a lot of big words, you see? Recession, depression. It's a cinch. We're in an economic downturn. Surely the safe money's on a more practical profession like airship captain or steelworker. Are we chumps to think these webcomic thingamajigs are really the business to be in?
Are really the cat's pajamas? Now you're on the trolley.
Now you're on the trouble. We're going to end up with our butts in a satchel. The old satchel butt. So, yeah, his main question is, how will an economic downturn affect webcomics?
It will.
I don't think it will.
I'll tell you why.
I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but on 9/11.
I don't remember. What is that?
9/11 was when this really... like the most horrible thing in American history ever happened.
I don't know.
No?
What is that?
Terrorists flew planes into the World Trade Center. Did you block it? Did you block it? Too soon? Is it too soon for these jokes? Too soon?
I remember. It flooded back.
But I remember one of the things that happened like the day after was a ton of us just being like,
oh, yeah.
So what now? Should I get a job? Is anyone going to care about comics?
No, I...
Do you remember that?
I don't remember. I mean, I wasn't really... I had been doing a strip for maybe a year and a half at that point, but I remember feeling like, I can't be funny. There's nothing funny anymore. It's all over.
But we
nothing
were all...
Nothing is good anymore.
Yeah, but we were... A lot of us were worried about, like, well, is anyone going to buy comic books anymore?
That happened in the world of entertainment, because I remember, like, whatever the... I know Britney wasn't the deal then.
No.
But, like, whatever the equivalent was like, whoa, who's sleeping with who? And then that happened, and like, Entertainment Weekly shut down.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And they're like, what are our stories going to be? Nobody gives
nobody
a damn
care.
About
yeah.
this anymore.
And but, no, we were seriously concerned. Like, no one's going to care about comics or anything. What do I do? Do I make comics? And then, I don't remember who it was, but I'm not going to say, because I don't remember, and I don't want to. But... One of my friends is like, no, you're going to do great. It's going to be awesome for you because traditionally in recessions and bad economic periods, entertainment goes up.
That's like, right, because you can lose yourself in something.
Because people want to lose themselves in it, so.
Yeah.
I never worry about that.
That makes sense.
But I think you should plan for the recession to hurt.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not smart to go, it's going to be fine. But
what are we talking about? What? We're all getting $600.
We're great.
We're fine.
You know what? We didn't even have to do comics to get that.
No.
We're fine.
We're going to be fine. Just when the $600 comes in, just make sure you spend it on webcomics.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm going to buy a Drobo system with mine to do automatic terabyte backups.
We do our part.
Of all my data. Stimulate that economy. $600. What were we thinking?
Come on. We're fine.
Whatever, dude. Thanks for your email.
I don't know I don't really know how to answer that. Is webcomics a less viable career choice than, say, working at a desk in an office? Yes, of course.
Yeah.
There's no getting around that. I don't know that there will be a time in the economy's history where we say, this is the right time to do a webcomic. This is when you get in, you know? It's always going to be tough. And it is. Boy, did I learn that this year.
But, like, I don't know. PvP survived the .com crash. It survived a lot.
Well, yeah.
Because you have something original that no one else could make to sell.
It's a different animal.
You're doing that thing that you and I both do where it feels like you're, well, I'm not taking in a deep enough breath.
I am. I'm breathing in.
God, we are effed in the head.
I have anxiety problems.
I know, me too.
Especially lately, because I'm coming off of, I'm not going to be working next week.
Don't worry about that, dude.
I'm back.
Let me do what I can to help you feel good about that. Like, if you need to lose yourself and come and be like, go comics and let's make comics.
How about a back rub?
Okay.
How about right now?
Relax. Take it easy.
It's all good.
All right, which one was I going for before you made me go to Plucky Girl Reporter?
I sure don't know.
Dealing with comic suggestions? We did that already, right?
Yeah, we did that one.
Keeping it original?
Oh, that's a good question.
This one?
Yeah, I looked through that one.
I like the way it starts. Got your book, and I'm currently reading through it. So far, it's been a great help.
What book? Like Star Slip book? Or
I think he's talking about how to make webcomics,
which
is on sale at Amazon.com, but you should buy it from us.
Yeah, because you get a sketch, and we get more money.
Yeah, so go to any one of our websites.
It's win-win.
For everyone. Win-win-win.
Win-win.
I win for solving a conflict at work.
Win-win-win-win, because God also wins.
Oh, okay.
He's
up win-win-win-win-win-win. Because Jesus and the Holy Spirit are also God in the Trinity.
And add another win to that because Edwin won, too.
Also, add one more win, dinosaurs. One question, though. This is from Mark Lefebvre.
Lefebvre.
One question. I know that there is no original ideas, but I still feel like I'm getting too close to other strips. I wanted to make a strip about a little boy and his imaginary friend. But then I thought Calvin and Hobbes, crap. I was thinking about what you said about Garfield and Get Fuzzy. Very similar, but completely different. Do you guys have any tips or tricks to distance myself from similar strips? That is a good question.
It is a good question. But here's the thing. I think if you bring whatever work you're doing, it's all about what voice you bring to it. If you're a huge Calvin and Hobbes fan, you're awesome, love Calvin and Hobbes. I love Calvin and Hobbes. I have every book. I love it. It's my favorite comic strip. It's the best ever. I love it. I draw pictures of him, and I'm going to do a strip about a little boy and his imaginary friend. There might be a problem.
There's probably going to be an issue.
Because the reason why you want to do it is because you love this other thing.
But if you have a really good idea and an original voice and...
Think about the premise. A little boy and his imaginary friend. Can we really say that's tapped? Like everything's been done with that?
No.
That is a huge premise.
Yeah.
That there's lots of room in there. I'd say if anything, if you know Calvin and Hobbes, you would then try and distance yourself by not doing that kind of humor. You'd find another avenue.
But there's a million things, a million different feelings and flavors of a strip that could exist with that premise.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's just like saying it's a strip about a family.
Right. You can't say that that's been done.
And look, if you think about any other form of entertainment, they're chasing the opposite of what you're doing. In other words, they're not saying, oh, God, this is too close to Calvin and Hobbes. They're saying, Calvin and Hobbes is a hit. We need our own Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
And America eats it up. It's not like America goes, well, I'm not going to watch this. They're just ripping off. No. America's like, what? Die Hard on a bus? Hell yes. What? Die Hard in a church? Bring it on, God. What? Die Hard underwater with frogs? Ribbit. I mean, there's a way to do it. And the best stories and concepts are, you know, all based off of, classic.
The archetypes.
Archetypes.
The seven only types of stories you can tell.
It's all Odysseus and it's all Homer. We're all ripping off Homer.
Get all literary.
What was the thing from The Simpsons where everyone is ripping off Steve Allen?
Oh, yeah.
If this isn't Steve Allen, you're stealing my bit.
So
no,
what
it's all the, like, have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah.
That could have been so many things.
Yeah.
But holy crap.
And it was dark and kind of scary.
And awesome.
And it was a great movie.
And disturbing.
But it could have been silly, except for the sad part at the end. But, I mean, it could have been pretty silly on the whole, right? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, if you haven't seen that movie, go watch it.
I didn't want to spoil it. It could have been a lighthearted romp.
Could have been silly.
Well,
where children are murdered.
So, I mean, it's all in the eye of the beholder. But no, it could have been a totally different movie. There's plenty of room. But see, he's asking if you have any tips or tricks. There's two that I could think of, and they're on opposite ends of the spectrum. Number one is get really familiar with the material that you would most likely steal so that you don't steal it. And then the other one is avoid the other material so you don't steal it.
I don't like the second one.
I did it. I did it with Star Slip, and I did it with Futurama because I was worried about Futurama, and I really haven't seen much of it. And I accidentally did Crib once or twice, and somebody was like, oh, that's a Futurama joke. But it's the future, and you're bound to, all right, that. But I guess you probably can get in a lot more trouble that way.
I just think it's dangerous to just try to be blissfully ignorant of what's out there.
Yeah, because depending on how you write it, you could nail it, and then then you'd have nowhere to run.
But because, if nothing else, Chris, like, you could watch Futurama and see what they're not doing and fill that niche.
That's true. Nah, that's true. It's better to be informed.
There's just too many variations on a theme to be worried about it.
Yeah. So as long as you're not outright like, instead of a tiger, I'm going to use a rabbit and it's the same.
Yeah.
Then you should be okay.
But I remember, especially with cartoonists, I think everybody kind of starts copying someone else. My first cartoons were all Garfield knockoffs when I was in the fourth grade, and they were Bloom County knockoffs when I was in high school, and then there were Calvin and Hobbes knockoffs when I was in college because I was just emulating what I liked.
Right.
But at some point, you kind of make your own thing, and then you're good to go.
But it's better, I guess, to... I lost my train of thought. I was going to say it was better to... Man, I don't remember.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. I know what I was going to say. It's better to just put it out there. Because at no point, you know, in your first 3 months while you're feeling out your own strip and maybe you're accidentally making it too much like Calvin and Hobbes, nobody is going to call you on it and then you have to shut down. You always you'll have time to evolve it elsewhere. And that's kind of what happened with Checkerboard Nightmare and Greystone Inn, Brad's old strip.
Right.
Because I did it for like 3 weeks and then I ran across his and I'm like, this is the same premise. And he's making all the jokes I wanted to make. So I had to shift it. I had to just go somewhere else with it. So, what you gonna do? I say just get started.
Just don't worry about it.
And don't worry about it so much.
The bottom line is this. If you're asking the question, if you're asking, is this too similar, is this too similar? Then yeah, probably it is. Right?
Well, no, I disagree with that. But what I would say is if you're asking the question, then you have the right mindset. Then you're not going to be the guy to go, I don't care, I'm taking it. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to steal it the hell with everybody who accuses me of it, even though I'm doing it.
I just think most artists know whether or not they're cribbing too much. Who was it that said creativity is an artist's ability to hide their source?
I don't remember.
But every artist has heard that.
Yeah.
It's always credited to one of their professors.
Because I did say it, but, because I was quoting the other guy.
Yeah. All right.
Unless you're Picasso, you're stealing my quote.
We've gone 58 minutes. We want to do one more question?
Let's just do one more on
Una
the
mas? This is from Adam Levermore Rich, and he gets compliments on the hyphen. Hi, guys. I just started drawing a strip called Save Hiatus. Savehiatus.com. Save Hiatus. Is hiatus hiatus?
You're right.
That sounds like a
Actually,
female
I read the premise
part.
To his. I read the premise of his strip. It's kind of funny.
What is it?
If unless I'm incorrect, it's about a group of fans who are trying to save a show that was taken off the air, and it's what they do.
Oh, that's cool.
That's kind of cool.
All right. I was mistaken the word hiatus with something else. It's a female part.
I.e. none, because no part could fit that.
I just started drawing a strip with a friend of mine a couple months ago, and I'm already drowning in digital files, from sketches to scans to backgrounds to reference images, not to mention the scripts and the strips themselves. If I'm this buried now after just 2 months, I'm terrified of what my hard drive will look like after a year or 5 years. How do you guys organize your digital files? Do you keep everything, or are things you feel comfortable tossing? Do you have any suggestions for naming conventions or folder structures that can help tame the digital file beast? Thanks, Adam.
You have a pretty good I mean, better than my system.
Well, I don't keep sketches, and I mean, maybe that's smart, but I don't keep sketches and scans and scripts. Maybe I should.
I did it because I do everything in Flash. I mean, it would be the same for Photoshop. I would keep that stuff on a layer beneath, you know.
Oh, so it's in the
I
file.
I just leave
script.
It in the file.
Oh.
But I mean, you can divide it up by years. You can.
Yeah, my system is I have one folder called Archives, and in that is a folder for every year. And in each year folder are two folders, PSD and GIF. PSD is the high-res image, and GIF is the 72 DPI image for the web. And that's it. So if I need a strip, I just go to the year, and I know if I need high-res or low-res. And my naming convention is PVP, year, month, day.
Yeah, because that's the file name, too.
Yeah.
When you upload it.
And then I have a folder called Artwork, and inside of that is a folder for everything else. Sketches, scripts, you know, and then just divide it by year. I think the best way to do it would be to divide it by year. What?
It's like, how do I organize something? And our answer is, organize it.
Yeah, by date.
Break it down by percentage of reds used in the 10%, 20%.
My tip is to only keep things that you think you will need to reprint in a collection later. So you're going to keep a script, only keep it if you're going to put a script book together or you're going to put it as an example as extra content. If you're going to keep sketches, the same. But you don't need to keep all your backgrounds and all of your preliminary art. I just don't see a need to keep all that. Do you?
That's true. And if you're using reference images that you got from Google Image Search, they'll still be there probably.
But why would you need them again?
Well, yeah, I don't know why. If you've drawn it once, just use it again. No, I mean, I would recycle it, but that's just me.
Let me go visit his website. Maybe his strip will give me... No, there's no need to keep all this.
You're going to be fine.
You're going to be okay. Look, you're going to fail. We've already determined. I'm looking at this strip. I mean, come on. The artwork is... writing. I don't even want to read it. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, it looks pretty good.
Actually, it does look really good. I'm looking at this artwork, and... Yeah, honestly... Oh, I really like this character here.
It's simple enough. I mean, not even that it... I guess if you're doing like a real reference-heavy strip like... oh, man, have you seen Lackadaisy?
No. Hey, but look, see this picture here of like the network?
Yeah.
Like he's always going to use that, so he needs to save that.
He needs to save that, but I don't know that he needs to save like the geometry that he drew it from or whatever.
But like he's got it here in this strip, so if you need it, just go to a previous strip where you had it before. Don't you do that?
Yeah, I do that all the time.
I like this strip. I'm going
to
start reading it.
I don't want to turn you down the wrong path, but it looks like your art is it's simple enough that you're not really going to have a problem with not being able to reference. You can always look back at something you already drew.
Oh, I like what he's done here with
maybe
these
just
posters
keep the text on another layer so you can see the stuff uninterrupted.
Yeah, why would you need to keep the script if you have the script?
If it's done.
It's in the strip.
Although, let me ask you this question. Because I have all my stuff in just a big pile, and I'm not very well organized.
Why does everyone have a problem drawing this gesture?
The arm?
This thing. No one can do it.
I don't think they go out far enough with that. What we're talking about is putting an arm behind your head, like in anime when some guy's embarrassed and he's going, yeah, look at this strip, Lackadaisy.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
It's amazing art. I can imagine that he would need to keep reference because he draws everything.
Yeah, this thing reminds me of Black Sad. Why is this guy not rich beyond
avarice? I don't know, but
avarice?
Not that this is any indication of wealth, but he won like 8 Web Cartoonist Awards.
You mean the the WCAAs?
Yes.
Oh, well, I mean...
Where's his money bank?
No kidding. He must sleep on bags of money, so what?
Well, it looks amazing.
I bet he won every award for webcomics his mom was giving out to this year.
But he deserves better than that.
No, this guy's an animator or something, right?
He's got to be. It's so fluid.
He's, oh my God.
See, because look at that drawing of the cat doing the little Charleston or whatever that is.
Yeah.
It's so fluid. But anyway.
Anyhow, I don't think you need to concern yourself with it so much. I think you might be overloading yourself with too much, with saving too much stuff.
Oh, but I did have a question for you, Scott. Are you ever find yourself in the place where you're putting together a book and you're like, okay, I need the high DPI version of this guy. Oh, don't have it. Do you do that?
Yeah, because I screwed up along the
way.
Yeah, because
you forgot to save or whatever.
Yes.
And then you redraw it.
Here's the best part.
Yeah.
This is what I've been finding lately has been happening.
What?
I've gotten in the habit, because my Mac doesn't crash as much as my PC used to, I forget to save along the way. And I close it. See, because the last thing I do is flatten the image and then reduce it. And then when you go to close that, it says, do you want to save it? And you go, no, because now I flattened it, so I don't want to save it.
But you didn't know that you haven't saved it.
I haven't saved it. So I'll go to put my book together, and I'll find a strip that's half done. I haven't finished drawing a panel, or there's no text in it, because I forgot to save it at the end.
Yeah. I constantly, and it's more a problem for me because I draw it digitally in the same file, I'll take yesterday's strip, change the file name to today's date, mm-hmm. or the next day's date, save it, and then I'll erase it and start drawing. So more often than not, I'll open yesterday's strip, erase it, start drawing, save it.
Oh.
And then I've wrecked yesterday's. And here's the worst part. Flash has 1,000 undo states. At least it can. So
yeah.
I've cranked it up to 1,000. So sometimes I'll be like 3/4 of the way through drawing tomorrow's and I go, oh no, did I save over my old strip? Oh God, I did. Okay, hold down Apple Z. And then I'm seeing like every little tiny shift that I made in placement of whatever. And I'm like, come on, you didn't need to move it around that much. You're eating history. I've got to get further back so I can get my old strip back to where I deleted it. And then it'll like die on like me, you know, working the first word balloon. And I've lost it for good.
Do you like whenever you have to go back in time on that history, do you play Philip Glass music and just start going backwards? Oh God, please make it back. I have enough history. Why was I moving it?
I should do that because it'd be more enjoyable. It's just harrowing.
Anyone that gets that Philip Glass reference and can email me after listening to this podcast what that is a reference to, what movie, will get a free How to Make Webcomics book.
Really?
Hmm? From moi.
All right, let me just take one.
Do you know it?
I think I do.
What?
I'm going to say it.
Say it.
No.
I don't really want to send a book out.
Is it, what is the title? Is it Time After Time?
No.
Is it...
Are you talking about the H.G. Wells movie with Mary Steenburgen in it? No, you are nowhere close.
Is it, what's the title of it?
No.
Oh, shoot. No, that can't be it, but it has his music in it. I have no idea. No. What is it? Well, just tell me.
No, I'm not. Now,
you'll have to send a book out.
No, I will send the book out. Someone will get it. If anyone could tell me what that was a reference to, when you're flipping through your history backwards, but you play Philip Glass music, and why that's funny, if someone can email me, kurtz@pponline.com, you get a free copy of How to Make Webcomics. And if you already have one, send it to a friend.
And you'll get a free copy of Philip Glass's latest CD to burn because it's awful music.
Don't let Gary hear you say that.
Well.
Rising and falling scales. He and Danny Elfman should start a club. Okay. This has been 1 hour and 8 minutes of
Webcomics Weekly.
Webcomics Weekly.
I've been Chris Straub, starslip.com.
And I've been Scott Kurtz, pvponline.com. We had a call-in from Brad Geiger, evil-comic.com, and because we went late on dinner at the counter eating burgers with a ridiculous host that wouldn't leave us alone, we missed our window to get Dave Kellett on.
But that's all right. You know what? I bet he's happier.
I would be. SheldonComics.com. Did you do a guest strip for him?
I did.
I need to do one still.
You didn't see it?
No, did they already run?
No, I was just asking if you had seen it.
Oh. I did see it. It was good.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be great. Webcomics Weekly.
Peace.